Good evening. This is the NLA Hams Net. I am Terry from Colorado. We're here to talk about things NLA-ish and Hamish. Anyone is welcome to attend, and anyone is welcome to contribute. We'd love to hear what you have to say. My call sign is KI0RE. That's the FCC issued call sign that I have. Terry from Colorado. And I usually just talk. We're going through the Ham Radio License Manual, third edition, good through June 30th, 2018, for technician. Right now we're on page 9-6 under the power density. I'm not sure exactly where it was yesterday, but I kind of have to talk about exposure just a little bit. If anybody has any comments, suggestions, criticisms, or general comments, please just start talking, and I will try and stop and listen to what you got to say, because I think everybody who contributes has something important to say. So without any further ado, if there are no comments or anything, suggestions, questions, I'd really have to talk to those instead of just kind of reflecting the book. But does anybody have anything? Please call now. Nothing heard, so I'm just going to continue on with what I was doing. We talked a little bit about paragraph 9.2, RF exposure, that starts on page 9-5. We talked a little bit about ionizing radiation. That's radiation that actually knocks off an electron or two. And then we talked about maximum permissible exposure, and that's the MPE. And hang on a second. We talked about a little bit of that stuff in RF safety techniques, preventing access to locations where strong fields are present and making sure strong fields are not created in or directed to areas where people might be present. So we talked about that. RF burns are caused by touching or coming close to conducting surfaces with a high RF voltage present, are also an effective heating. And that's where most of the issues come from. Your RF can resonate with your body, and that heating can be extreme. And so that's where most of the damage comes. So we're going to go on. Power density. The intensity of an RF field is called power density. Power density is the amount of energy per unit of area. And there's different people use different measurements, but the common one that we deal with is milliwatts per square centimeter. So how many milliwatts are there in this square centimeter? The power density of an RF field is highest near antennas and in the direction where the antennas have the most gain. In other words, a directional antenna will have a lot more gain off of the direction where it sends the signal than it will on the backside or especially on the sides. So you have to consider that. Increasing transmitter power increases power density everywhere around the antenna, so the same degree that transmitter power increased to the same degree. Excuse me. Increasing distance from an antenna is a good way to reduce the effect because it's covered by the inverse square law of the distance. So if you move twice as far, you're only getting one-fourth of the energy coming from that RF. It's just like light. If you separate yourself from a light source, whatever brightness it was, you go twice the distance, and it's going to be one-fourth the brightness, not one-half. And I can explain that to anybody that needs to. Exposure limits. Safe levels of exposure based on demonstrated hazards, and they say this, and they're pretty good about it, and what we'll get into a little more in a little bit. There are measured permissible exposure levels. because they specify absorption rate, SAR, specific absorption rate, varies with frequency. So does the MPE, as shown on figure 9.2. 9.2, you kind of got to take a look at it. It's pretty straight. It's a logarithmic scale, and so you have to kind of look at it and see that it drops down. A lot of parts of your body, and your body has certain frequencies that it resonates on, and the figure 9.2 shows you the maximum permissible exposure. And for instance, between 30 megahertz and 300 megahertz in a controlled environment, 1 milliwatt per square centimeter is the limit of what they want. But there's a whole lot of things that go into that. But if you're down around 0.3 megahertz, which is, what, 300 kilohertz, that's pretty low, you can have a power density of about 100 milliwatts per square centimeter. So it varies according to what resonates with the body or the eyes or the brain or, you know, where damage can be done. Some people even say it should be much less. Some people say it should be much more. I'll let you guess who wants there to be more. A more stringent level or standard. And there's other people that that want it to be much looser. I encourage you to stick to these until you learn a little bit more about it, because knowledge, in this case, knowledge is definitely a positive thing for you. It helps protect you. Your specific absorption rate depends on the size of the body or body part. In other words, your trunk has, it can absorb a lot. Your arm can't absorb a whole lot before it starts getting warm. They say that body parts are naturally resonant, that everything has resonance. An adult-sized body is resonant at about 35 megahertz. If the person is grounded, and 70 megahertz if the person is not grounded, body parts are resonant at higher frequency, smaller wavelengths. For example, an adult's head is resonant at the much higher frequency of 400 megahertz. So it all depends. Above and below the ranges, the highest absorption, the body responds less and less to RF energy. And I'd say that's true, but when you start getting into microwaves, like is on your microwave on your countertop or on top of your stove or whatever, that is stimulating water molecules inside of your body, and it will do it, period. So you kind of got to watch that stuff. Also, your eyes are especially susceptible. You can get damage, and it'll cause early cataracts from too much exposure to RF energy. And again, there's people that argue that we're exposed to too much RF energy already, and there's people that say, you can have a much higher rate. I'll leave that up to you to find out. But Paul Bourdieu has written a book called The Zapping of America, and he makes a pretty good case, but I'm not entirely convinced of his findings. But he makes a very good case that it should be much more stringent than it is. So stay inside of these standards so that you're not exposing people and incurring a problem because of it. Different frequencies. The highest SAR, specific absorption rate, are from 30 to 1,500 megahertz. That's 1.5 gigahertz for people. These are the regions on the MPE graph where the limits for exposure are lowest. So they show the MPE graph shows how much is allowed. You don't want to go over that graph. And it takes a big dip between 300 and 1500, or 330 and 300 megahertz, and then it's sloping up 300 to 1500 megahertz. And then it's 5 all the way across the rest of the way. I'll let you look up the graph. It's on it's online also, though I do not have the website in front of me. When comparing MPE for amateur bands at 3.5, 50, 440, and 1296, which are all bands for the amateur, you can see that the MPE is lowest at 50 megahertz and highest at 3.5 megahertz. So you're allowed a little more MPE or a specific absorption at that lower frequency. Then they talked about controlled and uncontrolled environments. They establish a controlled, when it's a controlled environment, then you're only allowed to do it for so many minutes. When it's an uncontrolled environment, you're only allowed to do it for so many more minutes. What is it? The average period is 6 minutes for controlled environments, and the averaging period is 30 minutes for uncontrolled environments. Now, what are controlled and uncontrolled? People in controlled environments are aware of their exposure and can take the necessary steps to minimize it. They can walk away. They can put distance between them. They can leave and go to the store when you're transmitting. But maybe your neighbors are in an uncontrolled environment. They're not aware that they're being exposed at all. And so you kind of got to be careful. So they say the averaging period is 6 minutes for controlled environments. And controlled environments are normally much closer to the antenna than uncontrolled environments. And the averaging period is 30 minutes for uncontrolled environments. Okay, am I clear or did I mess that up real bad? I'll go on. Since the effects from RF exposure related to heating and take place over many seconds, the MPE limits are based on averages, not peak exposures. So if you're looking at a sine wave or a signal that you're getting on an oscilloscope, the peak is the highest point that waveform goes, and then the lowest point that the waveform goes, and the peak is in between those two. Those are the peaks, high and low. But if you're averaging, you're kind of looking across the whole thing and averaging it out, what the total is. Let's see. The difference in averaging periods reflects the difference in how long people are expected to be present and exposed. During the averaging period, a transmitter may only be generating RF for a fraction of the time. For most amateur contacts, the transmitter output is no more than 50% of the time and usually much less. So they allow you to take off for the time that you're not transmitting. And then not only that, this pattern lowers the duty cycle of the emissions. Duty cycle is a ratio of the transmitted signal on the air time to the total operating time during the measurement period. So if you're operating the entire time transmitting, well, then it's 100% of the 3 minutes. Simply say the duty cycle is the percentage of time a transmitter is transmitting. And duty factor is the same thing. So there's another chart on page 9-8 that's operating duty cycle of different modes commonly used by amateurs. So conventional single sideband is either 20%, or conversational single sideband is only 20% if you're not using voice processing DSP. And it's more if you are. Some AF, any of the digital modes are near 100% or 100%. Voice AM modulation, 50% modulation, 50%, 100% modulation. And you'd think that would be more, but it's less. And that's because you're not spending so much time going up and down when your modulation is restricted. And when it does go up and down, they tend to cancel each other. Voice AM, voice amplitude modulated voice, no modulation, is 100% because you're putting out a straight carrier that's not being changed and lowered. Voice FM is 100%. Digital FM is 100%. Conversational CW, only 40%. You're sending out bursts, but there's time between the dits and the dahs. I can explain that more if somebody needs an explanation, but I'm going to go on. So since duty cycles affects the average power transmitter transmissions, it must be considered when evaluating exposure. So what they do is that they're considering four factors for RF exposure. The transmitting power, how much power are you putting up that antenna? You can estimate feed line losses in between the antenna and the transmitter if your antenna is separated. The frequency, because that determines the frequency, you have a specific absorption rate that's higher at certain frequencies and lower at others. So you want to consider the frequency. That chart on page 9-6, figure 9.2. The distance to the antenna. So the further away you are from the antenna, the inverse square law starts catching up, and you're much less. If you're twice as far as you were a second ago, then you're only getting a quarter of the RF energy. So the biggest thing is don't get close to an antenna, especially when they're transmitting. And then if you do have to operate because you're going to string a new ground wire or fix an antenna tower, make sure your transmitter's off so you're not getting bombarded by all that. And then the last one is the radiation pattern of the antenna. If you have a Yagi up there, a Yagi has a specific direction. And there's a lot more power that goes out in that direction than goes to the sides. And so you want to ensure that get out of the beam of a Yagi antenna or any directional antenna. Go to the side where there's not much power at all. And then there's other things. If you have an antenna with gain, an antenna with a 6 dB gain means that it's a fourfold increase in power radiated in the preferred direction. I have an antenna that has a 6 dB gain on, it's on 144 megahertz, which is the 2-meter band. And I also have, and it's got a 3 dB gain, which is twice the power, on 440. So that's got to be figured into it because that you want the power that's coming out of that antenna. And there's some formulas on here, and you can go through those. And they talk about averaging the power. And you end up multiplying that number that I read off about the duty cycle and the amount of minutes that you're actually transmitting in the 3 or 6 minutes that you did. And then you tie all this together and multiply it out, and it comes out, and you get a number. And that number is it's how many watts are coming out of the antenna. And then you're going to look at the area that's enclosed in that antenna. Am I going to tell you exactly how to do it here? No, because I could go on for 3 or 4 hours on how to compute this. I'm not going to do it. Evaluate exposure. Power thresholds for RF exposure evaluation. There's table 9.5, and it has a list. And 2 meters is about 50 watts, and 70 centimeters about 70 watts. You're allowed a little more as you get a little higher and a little lower, but right into that 2-meter band, it's not very good. Excuse me. Okay, everybody has to calculate they're responsible for ensuring that anyone around their antenna is safe. All hams have to figure this out. And when you go to get your license, there's a statement on there that you will follow all these safety practices, evaluate your exposure, both controlled and uncontrolled, and come to a decision about whether your station is safe or not. All fixed stations must perform an exposure evaluation. Mobile and handheld transceivers are exempt. There are three ways of making this evaluation. By far, the most common evaluation uses techniques outlined in the AFC Bulletin 65 for OE, Office of Engineering Technology. That uses tables and everything. And then you can actually use some equipment to measure it, and that'll work too. Once you've done an evaluation, you don't need to reevaluate unless you change equipment or status or the height of your antenna or the type of antenna or something like that. Let's see. I'm going to turn the page. The general procedures, they talk about general procedures, how to compute this, and you want to do it in each band that you're going to be using. And if you think about it, that's kind of smart because no one antenna will cover all bands, period. It's a physical impossibility. I suppose you could do it, but it takes a lot of matching or you're going to blow out your finals. I've done that, so I speak from experience, and the hams will understand what I'm saying. And you want to be cognizant of what your responsibilities are. And then I said, let's just think about it on the other side. When you're going to put together an antenna and a radio station, what do you do to find a potential hazard? You to minimize them, you want to locate your antenna away from where people can get close to them and away from property lines. This is always a good idea. See, if you can stay away from your property lines, you're not sending RF, as much RF, into the living rooms of the people next door to you, which is not it's bad form. But you have to calculate for every place. And usually it's pretty easy because you say, well, at this point I had 50 watts, but then my next-door neighbor's living room is twice as far away. Well, I'm going to have one-fourth that or 20 watts, and that's well below the maximum allowed. And if you start figuring up how much power is actually allowed and how much power is actually reaching your antenna and how far somebody is away, you quickly begin to realize that in most instances,
looks like we've lost our speaker for a moment. She seems to have been booted offline, so I think she'll be back in just a bit.
Okay, I'm back. Is there anybody around?
Well, welcome back.
Okay, sorry about the delay. My phone, they've been working on it today, and I thought it was fixed, and all the outages were done. We were talking about antennas and good idea, things that you can do. So you can put your antenna away from where people are. You can raise your antenna because the higher you get it, the better, the longer distance it is to the ground, and anybody standing on the ground that might be affected. But that also does another thing. If you take and if you try and draw it out by raising your antenna just a little bit, your signal actually can go further. If you draw a line on where the earth is, versus the height of your antenna, a low antenna hits the curvature of the earth and can't go any lower than that. But if you raise your antenna, it can reach a little lower on the other side of the curvature of the earth, and that gives you a little more distance at times. If you have a beam antenna, avoid pointing the antenna where people are likely to be. I just knew a guy that lived up on a hill here in Denver. He had a high power, a high tension line going through his backyard, and his antenna had to be pointing, I believe it was east, when he raised it or lowered it. And if as long as it was pointed east when he raised it, he could raise it, and then once he got up above the power line, then he could rotate it anywhere he wanted to go. But before he brought it back down, he had to turn it back east and lower it down so it wouldn't hit the power line. You could use a lower gain antenna to reduce radiated power density or reduce transmitter power. This kind of goes back to the idea that you want to only use as much power as needed to affect the communication. There's been many times when I've been on high and I'm getting a good strong signal from a guy, so I'll go down to medium and he doesn't mention it, and I go down to low and he says, you're kind of getting scratchy. I say, okay, I'll kick it back up to medium, and maybe I'm putting out 10 watts. You only need to use high to establish the communication. Once you do, it's time to back off a little bit, and that helps out. Limit the average power of your transmissions by transmitting for shorter periods or even using a mode with lower duty cycle. And that's a little harder, but it also goes to focusing what you want to say. Think about what you want to say, say it, and get off and listen. If they understood, they'll reply back in a succinct way, and you'll get your message across, and you'll be able to communicate. If they didn't understand, let them ask their question. Don't try to anticipate what issue that it is that they want to comment about. Ask them, and you'll be much better off. So make your transmission succinct and to the point, and then it makes them very efficient. And you transmit for less time. Any of these techniques will reduce RF exposure to you and your neighbors. You'll likely be able to find a combination that has minimum effect on your operations, yet still make sure that you are within the MPE limits. That's all they're trying to do, is get you to think about this stuff. Even though emissions from mobile and handheld transceivers are exempt from evaluation, there are some good ways to minimize unnecessary exposure. Place the mobile antennas on the roof or trunk of the car to maximize shielding of the passengers. That only goes for cars that have metal over your head. I've seen certain cars and trucks that have plastic over your head, and you put it up there, you're not doing yourself any good. Find another place. Also, they say trunk. Well, the trunk is aiming right into you. I don't like the trunk idea, but it's better than like a bumper mount where the main radiator of power is right there in the middle of the antenna and it's focused right into your passenger compartment and the window doesn't stop it at all. You could use a remote microphone to hold a handheld transceiver away from your head. I do recommend that very much. I use it all the time. So anytime you're going to get a receiver, like you're going to buy one of these Bofangs that we've talked about, get you a speaker mic, what's called a speaker mic, and it plugs into the speaker and microphone jacks on the side of the radio, and you can hold the radio up in the air. Well, you're holding it an arm's length further on, that's maybe 2 feet, so it's 2 feet away from you, which is about five or six times the distance where you're holding it in front of your face. Definitely better for your eyes, your head, and your general problems with RF. But you hold the speaker down by your mouth so everybody can hear you and you can hear them. I've done that many times. So I'm just listening and I'm not transmitting. I can hold it in a regular place or even have it attached to my a harness or a pocket or something like that. And then when I want to speak, I just reach down, grab it, hold it way up in the air so that I'm minimizing the RF energy that's going out to everybody around me. And I talk into the speaker mic. And the speaker mic allows me to hold it way up there because if you hold it up there and you're not using the speaker mic, they can't hear a thing you said. And to point the mic at you so you can talk up to it, you got to lay your antenna flat. And laying your antenna flat is not conducive to making good contact unless you point it the right direction. If you know where the repeater is, great. If you don't, you're kind of self-defeating there. All right, any questions before I go on? We're up to 9.3, mechanical safety, on page 9-11. I think we should pick up there. I think I'm going to do some more reading. And that's about it. I think I can cover that next week. So everybody come prepared to talk about that if you can. And I'll try and get through it. And we'll be done with most of the book. I think it's a glossary after that. So if anybody has an idea which way they want to take this meeting after that, please let me know. But for now, I think we've accomplished something tonight. We talked about a tough subject that you really need to study a little bit to get the hang of. And this emphasizes the idea that you need to tie up with a local ham club. You need to find mentors, which are called elmers. So you want to find other hams that can elmer you. It's used as a verb. So they can elmer you and teach you some of the things that you need to know and how to do them. You'll learn a lot faster that way than just keeping your head in a book and trying to organize it in your mind.
Hey, Terry?
A lot of good hams out there. Yes, go ahead.
Jim in New Mexico, can this eye damage, can that be applied to cell phone usage, or are you strictly speaking of ham?
Well, your cell phones are up around, if I remember correctly, 2.5 gigahertz somewhere near, I think, in microwave. Some of the older phones are in 800 megahertz, and yeah, but it gets better. And no, I don't think any of your cell phones are at the 5-watt range. So it's a little more intense when you're using ham radio. Could it be? Yeah. You know how I work my cell phone? I put it on speaker and I turn it upside down and hold it down below my chin because it points both the speaker and the microphone up towards me. And if I can, I use my little earplugs that work on my cell phone, and I think that's much better off. Any RF energy has the potential, and the point of it is that it depends upon your exposure over a given time. Think of it this way. You turn the burner on or the microwave, As long as you leave it in there, it keeps heating. The second it turns off or you open the door and it cuts off, the heating stops. So if you're using a cell phone a lot in the car and it's up against your head and, you know, on a regular basis, yeah, that might have an effect. If you get on and you use it about, you know, 30 seconds just to see if somebody wants, so you can find out what somebody wants you to pick up the store, why does that? I kind of went over your question, but do you understand what I'm saying?
I'm listening.
Person from New Mexico?
Just listening.
Sorry,
to talk about the ham damage, possibly the eyes. I have noticed sometimes it seems like my eyes feel funny when I have been using the cell phone for a long time. Try to use speakerphone all I can. You know,
well,
it's 3 or 4 feet away.
I find with a cell phone, I use a Bluetooth device, a headset mainly, and that way I don't have to have a cell phone anywhere near my face.
Gotcha.
And one of the reasons that I do that is in May I had the pacemaker put in, and if I put the phone up to my ear, the pacemaker makes the phone do all kinds of weird stuff.
Well, that's not good.
And everything. And so I had to go to a Bluetooth, but I find that that it helps in many ways to have the cell phone away from my ear, away from my face, away from my head.
All right, I'll keep watching. Lately, I haven't been using the cell phone much, and I noticed my eyes feel great. A week or so ago, it seemed like my eyes were bothering me a lot, but I can't remember if that was connected with a lot of cell phone usage.
Amazon has a lot of good Bluetooth devices for reasonable prices, you know, anywhere from $16 to $20.
With how long extension cord are you using where the cell phone?
Wireless. Wireless.
Oh, wireless, okay. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, but that's a very low power wireless. Bluetooth is very low power. It only works within about 3, 4, 5 feet. And so you're reducing the power that the transmitter is actually using. The cell phone's got to reach a cell